everybody. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Chris.
All right. So this week we're going to be talking about, you know, the usual. We're going to go over some news a little bit. We're going to go over some spoilers a little bit. Our spoils of war that we've earned over the last week here.
You mean spoils of the vault.
Spoils of the vault, indeed. And then after the break, we're going to be coming back to talk about Shadows over Innistrad and just all the flavor that's packed into this set. I mean, that's something the first Innistrad did amazingly well, and they're knocking it out of the park again. So after the break, we'll be talking about that. But first, like, what have you guys been up to? What's everybody been doing?
Let's see. I played in a modern Winnabox for Shadows over Innistrad, trying to get my pre-order box, and obviously I won it. I was playing Grixis Fairies, where I was jamming Colgan's Commands, Lightning Bolts, just pretty much Jund, except instead of green, I wanted to play fairies.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. You posted the list, right?
Yep,
that was your okay. Yeah, because I remember looking over that, and it was pretty light on fairies overall. I thought a little bit less than the standard fairies build, right?
Yep, it was more of just a Jun build with a different twist, and I caught all sorts of good matchups.
Yeah, that's awesome. What about you guys, Chris? What you been up to?
I've just been playing a little bit of Pauper here and there, and I've been goldfishing elves on my couch, you know. Trying to figure out how to get better with it.
Yeah, I dig it. What about you, Alex? What's going on in the Midwest?
I played a modern IQ, you know, continuing to brave, you know, Eldrazi winter or spring, whatever you want to call it. Played Blue Moon, top 8-ed, and then lost the first round to Merfolk on just... It just turned out bad. Like, I kept a hand in the dark because I didn't know he was playing. It was full of counterspells, and he turned one Cavern Curse Catchered me. So, like, it was one of those.
Yeah, it happens sometimes. But, hey, congrats on the top 8, man. That's awesome.
Yeah,
so, I mean, looking at tournaments from the weekend overall, though, we had, you know, Star City Games Indy Standard Open. The winning deck was a four-color Rally list, which looks awesome. I know I've seen articles popping up for Rally post-rotation. Now, is Rally the Ancestors rotating, or is that sticking around?
It's rotating.
Yeah, Rally drops.
Okay, so I guess really what they're looking at is just all these other valued creatures that are in the list and what you can do with those after. So cool to see it doing its thing while it's sort of in the waning of its career, in Standard at least. And then we also had GP Paris, which is also Standard. Grixis Control took that. Have you guys had a chance to look at this list?
It's more of a Grixis Control. I mean, it has some of the elements of Control, but it plays more like a mid-range deck.
Gotcha.
Where they want to land Kalidus at a certain point. And just try to end the game from there.
Makes sense. Yeah, I have
it runs a fair amount of Planeswalkers, too, with Jay Subnixlis and Chandra. So
nice. That's what's up. So sort of a Super Friends mid-range kind of grindy build.
Yep, just more of a point to prove that I was very wrong on Chandra. I'm sorry, guys.
you know. Sometimes
I was there with you, too. I thought that card was bad, and then I played it in Blue Moon, and I'm like, it turns out if it's good in Modern, it's good in Standard.
Yeah, how's it been doing in Blue Moon? You digging it?
It's exactly what the deck wants. Like, it's a board wipe for small creatures against like Zoo and Effendi and things like that. You know, it's a quick clock if I want to plus it to close out a game really quick, or if I have like a handful of counter spells in the late game that I don't want, I need to interact with the board, I just zero it and get a whole new hand.
Yeah, that's what's up.
One of the most disgusting things about it is when they go, they plus up the Chandra, you have no board presence, and then they play another Chandra, and then they plus it up and kill you out of nowhere. I fell into that a couple times, and it was just brutal. Chris, have you any experience with the deck?
Not really. I haven't had a lot of experience with it. I've kind of stayed on the fringes of Standard right now, but I'm waiting for the new set to come in, and then I'm going to jump.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's where we're at right now. Standard's exciting. I'm glad to see things happening in the format right now, but overall, we're all kind of playing that wait game. I think a lot of people are already starting to brew with the new set. I mean, spoils, I mean, we're getting there, right? We don't have the full set yet, but we've got a bunch of it, so people have a decent idea of what's going to happen. But going down the list here, next we've got, there's not going to be any changes in the Shadow of Innistrad packs and the double face cards from last Innistrad. So, basically, the double face cards are extra, right?
Yes, they are the 16th card in the pack.
Okay, cool. So, no difference than what happened last Innistrad, but for anybody who wasn't playing, tell us what that means, sort of, to a player.
So, drafting them is kind of weird, but you just learn to deal with it, where you're gonna see, the people are going to see the backside of the card. So, you have to be... Like, you can kind of hide what you're trying to do, but at the same time, it just doesn't always happen. But, obviously, if you... open up Arlan Cord, you pull it no matter what part of the draft you're in, stuff like that.
Yeah, makes sense. And I mean, but how does this affect like rares in the set, or rares in a draft, basically, in a limited environment.
They're, I mean, you're still going to have your rare in the pack, and then a, potentially a double-faced rare or double-faced mythic. So you can have, like, a double rare pack in draft.
Nice. Like,
there's even a weird chance you could have a triple rare pack where you have a foil rare, a rare in the mythic, or, you know, just you can get a lot of rares out of limited in this set.
Yeah, that's what's up. And, I mean, that's going to definitely affect the limited environment. There's lots of sweet stuff in this set, too. So, I mean, so what you're saying, though, is for the 16th card, so you get your traditional 15-card pack plus the flip card. So is there going to be a flip card in every pack?
No.
It's just added when it's there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool deal. But, yeah, so, I mean, like Jerry said, there is the chance.
I think it works out to, like, roughly, like, every 8 packs or something like that. Like, a flip, a double-faced. If gotcha. I remember right from last time. So
that's 1 in 8 is just any double face there, regardless of rarity?
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Nice. So then going down the list here next, the Legendary Cube is coming back on MTGO. And this is something, like, I'm glad that it's coming back, because every time it comes up, I always say I'm going to play it, and I still haven't. Have any of you guys had a chance with this?
Man, this is
Oh, yeah. I play all the cubes, man.
Goofiest cube ever. Just the things you end up drafting in it, because it almost feels like EDH Lite, where you go big.
Yeah, I could see that. Makes sense.
Yeah, like a lot of your decks do feel like EDH decks, because you just have a bunch of one-ofs that are all great cards.
Yeah, I mean, seeing like screenshots posted online and stuff of packs that people are trying to choose from, and then ultimately deck lists and stuff. I mean, you see some crazy stuff. So, I mean, it's always fun to kind of do these more like casual events and do things on MTGO that are a little bit less like serious, have some fun with stuff like this. This is running, it's going to start March 30th, and it's just running until April 15th. Some of the things going on with it, though, is that there's going to be, so is this fewer non-legendary creatures? Am I reading that right?
No, it's adding a few. It used to be no non-legendary, all legendary creatures. They've added a few.
Gotcha.
Like, specifically, they call it ones that feel like legendaries but aren't, to kind of clean up how you draft. So you don't draft like the same legendaries every time, and they get to feel the same after a while is what they're trying to avoid.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So I didn't realize that. So typically, oh, yeah, of course, Legendary Cube makes perfect sense. But so typically only legendary creatures are mixed in. Do we know any of the ones that are going to be the non-legendary creatures included?
They've talked about like Galvanoth, which is a red creature that you look at the top card every upkeep, and if it's an instant or sorcery, you cast it free. Platinum Angel, things like the things that, you know, feel big but aren't.
Gotcha. Makes sense. I mean, there's, I think every few sets we get some of those creatures like, this feels like it should have been a legendary, either the ability or it's a named creature, things like that. But what else is going on with this cube though, aside from that?
They also cut down on color fixing, because it used to be, like, it had all the, you know, duels, so you could just get, you know, a fetch land and, like, two duels, and you just have great mana.
Gotcha.
So they've cut down on that, because it was just, like, you would draft the best cards. You take the best card out every pack, and then try to make the mana work and just play five color.
Gotcha.
So they've cut down on that. They want you to be more focused on actually have, like, an archetype or a strategy.
No, that makes sense. I mean, that seems like that's definitely going to make it a better limited, like, playing environment, not just a bunch of stuff hobbled together. So that's what's up. What are, like, have you had a chance to look at any of the archetypes that they might be pushing in this set?
Oh, yeah, they put out an article on the Magic.Wizards.com, and it had in there, they talked about some of them. So, like, their dragons is one that was in it before, because you had all the legendary, you know, elder dragons and dragon lords from Cons and Fate and all that. But then they've added a few things to help support that, like Crux of Fate and Dragonstorm to help just further push that over the edge. They added cards to help artifacts. They added Trading Posts and Tezzeret to kind of help push that synergy. I already talked about they added Galvanoth, which helps with like the Cruel Ultimatum decks, because like I'll just reveal a Cruel Ultimatum off the top, cast it for free, and then cast it out of my hand. Like,
yeah, not too shabby.
They also added Mystical Teachings for that one as well to kind of help. They added some stuff for their animator decks, because there's always, you know, Gristleban and Goryeo's Vengeance and their animators and all that was already there. They added spider spawning, so for when you're, you know, milling yourself out, you get some creatures in the yard, you can get paid off even if you don't have like a reanimate spell at the time. And they also added a Leviathan that was not legendary, but when it comes into play, it bounces all their non-lands, and it's like a 5/5, so it has a legendary feel to it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then in green, we got some elves action was already there. They added Draug of Warcaller, which pumps elves, is not a lord, so it's not legendary, but it still pumps elves and has elf synergy, so they added that. They also added Voice of the Woods, which is really good with elves as well. And then they also threw more towards the Enchantress deck in there. You got Sigil of the Empty Throne now to get you some angels.
Nice.
And also Enchantress Presence, which was the enchantment that has the same effect as Enchantress, where you draw a card when you play enchantment. So.
Nice. That's what's up. So, I mean, it definitely looks like the non-legendary cards they're adding, yeah, I mean, they're pushing these different archetypes. And then, like you said, redacting some on the color fixing is going to balance this out. So it looks a little bit more like constructed decks in a sense. I mean, you have to pick and choose a little bit more and draft a little more, like, strategically, right?
I mean, you can
it feels more like a regular cube, because cubes have the same thing. Like, yeah. When you build your own cube or when they have the other cubes online, like Holiday Cube and stuff, there are overarching themes that you kind of want to draft into, and this helps push that, I think.
Yeah, you can go into this draft and actually have a plan instead of just the what Alex said before, picking up just the best cards. Like, I want to go in and I just want to draft Dragonstorm, my thing I want to do, but now I can do that. You know, it's a playable archetype.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it seems like that'll definitely make it a little less wonky and a little bit more fun over time. I think if it's just pick the best card every single time, that gets a little bit, like, overwhelming after a while and a little bit dull in a sense because it's so repetitive. But nah, so yeah, this is cool.
It definitely gets redundant where you're just, because you, like I said, you kind of draft the same deck every game where I'm just, I picked all the best cards, but I'm in shifted towards, you know, these colors, or I picked up, you know, the ultimatum this time instead of, you know, the big creature. But yeah. This will help. You go in and say, I drafted dragons last time. I'm going to draft, you know, elves this time and go for it, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. That's awesome. Good to see them improving on this, even though it's, you know, sort of a niche kind of thing, but cool deal. So,
I mean, it's good hype for when it comes around. You know, if they're going to keep improving it and making it fun, it's not going to be repetitive. So when it's only there for a couple weeks, so you can just jam it all those weeks and not get old, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And then it's something fresh each time, so that's awesome. But going down the list next, we got some new Judge promos. The first one is Shardless Agent, which, has this been reprinted before?
Nope, it's only been printed the one time in the Commander set. It's still worth like a $20, $25 uncommon.
Yeah, so that's a pretty sweet Judge promo.
That'll be worth a bajillion dollars. if you got that bajillion dollars, go for it.
Yeah, there you go. And then the other one's going to be Temporal Manipulation, which I'm not familiar with this card. This is...
Three colorless and two blue sorcery, take an extra turn.
Gotcha. So one of the pretty much a standard, like, take another turn kind of card.
Yep.
Wait a minute. Is that the one from Portal 3K?
I think so. Right. It's the new art on it is actually pretty sweet. It's like a sundial with like two of the little, like, you know, angle triangle things sticking up, and it's pretty sweet looking.
Nice. Okay. How's the Shardless Agent art? Because I never really liked the original.
It's pretty much the same, but it's shiny.
Weak.
I mean, it wasn't foil before, so like...
That's true, yeah. So, but
if you're trying to foil that deck out, man, make it happen.
Yeah. You have a very pricey option now.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's only running Legacy, so it's pricey anyway.
True. So now, going on down the list, this is a little bit more spicy here. We got some new spoilers that have come out since... I don't know why I want to say spoils constantly tonight. We have new spoilers that have come out. The first one...
I mean, a lot's come out. I kind of want to just focus on a couple that... One's really good that I want to talk about. One is potential. And one's a little spicy. So if we can get them, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've kind of gotten through the initial wave, right? I think the only mythic left to reveal is Emrakul, right?
It's not happening.
That's
not
the happening. Only one that's left. Emrakul?
No, nah, right. Man. Clearly, it's Merit Lage.
Merit Lage.
I mean, I'd be fine with Merit Lage, but I don't want Emrakul, man.
Merit Lage would be sweet, but Emrakul would break Alex's heart. So that's what we're pulling for.
that's how it's going to be. All right.
But now let's talk about some real spoilers. So. The first one that we have here is Sin Prodder, which this card is awesome. Like, who wants to talk about this sweet, sweet card?
Me.
Jerry's
me,
got
me.
His hand
oh
up.
Oh, my God.
It.
This card.
Did he really raise your hand, Jerry?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We're in
did.
Classroom here.
I did.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead.
So this card is, it is a 3-2 for 3, where at the beginning of your upkeep, you reveal the top card of your library. Your opponent chooses whether it goes into your hand or if it doesn't. If it doesn't, they lose life equal to its converted mana cost. It is a reverse side of Dark Confidant, where instead of you getting punished for drawing extra cards, you're punishing your opponent for just playing this.
Yeah.
At 3 mana, this is the most powerful, like, 3-drop draw spell I have ever seen on anything.
Like, if they choose for it not to go in your hand, is it graveyard or bottom of deck?
Graveyard. So it enables your Delirium. In the dream world, I flip a World Breaker, and the world explodes. where they either take seven or it goes to my hand. Neither and if they take the seven, them. I can just recur it to my hand. Like, it's so intuitively good. I cannot see this card not being played in at least Modern.
Yeah, I mean, Sin Prodder is very sweet. It's already picked up the nickname Rob. You know, obviously, a hint at Bob. But
well, like, it's the red Bob. That's where it gets the R.
Oh, God, I didn't even make that connection. That's
or it's
kind of
reverse,
I guess.
Bob.
Oh, reverse Bob Rob works, Bob, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's slightly more formal than Bob, so there's that too. But well, no, I mean, like,
right. So real quick, I just want to talk about the reason I don't like this card. Like,
right.
The card's amazing; I'm not going to deny it. The reason I don't like it is, so Wizards straight up said they based it off of Bob, Dark Confidant, right?
Right.
The problem with that is Dark Confidant was a player created card, and like. So it's already doing things that, you know, R&D didn't necessarily want, they didn't think about doing, and it had a downside. Like, it had a legitimate downside of you lose life for drawing cards. And they got rid of the downside for Sin Prodder. Like, ugh.
Like, I think I found of one downside where you're missing land drops and your opponent knows it, so every time you reveal a land, it goes to the yard. But even then, that's such a very few and far between situation that I don't think it really matters. Like, card is just
no, and even
gas.
Then, like, you still get a draw step. Like, you still have another shot at a land. So, like,
yeah, that's not even a downside because you're still going to get your normal draw step, so your chances are the same either way.
And I also completely skipped on something. It has menace. It has menace. It,
it just didn't
through.
Do enough already. Yeah.
Yeah. No, like, just looking at this, you know, card cost theory, you know, throwback to a couple episodes ago, or actually it was last episode, I wasn't here. Anyway, it's a 3-drop, that's a 3/2 with menace. Already, that's good enough for a 3-drop. Like, that's pretty solid.
It's pretty fun.
And then you throw on an ability of card advantage / burn to the face? Come on.
In red, like, of all colors?
Yeah.
I feel like this is supposed to be a 5 or 6-drop, not a 3-drop.
As a 3-drop, it feels instantly playable. I mean, I can't imagine a meta where this card is bad. Even in the world of Modern with Bolts, it's not. I mean, it's not going to see Modern play. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but my point just being
Will.
Really? Yeah?
You run it beside Bob and just draw all the cards.
Yeah. I mean, but the point just being though that even if it's in a format with Bolt and it's a very boltable card, it's still great. Like, yeah, it eats a bolt. That sucks sometimes. But if it sticks around, holy cow, the upside's awesome. I mean, especially in red where you're usually putting your opponent in a situation where they don't want to be taking damage every turn. So you're probably going to be getting cards, which may be just as bad for them. The one thing I do like about this card, though, is that it's a little bit skill intensive on your opponent's side of the table because those are some serious decisions you're going to have to make where can I risk taking this damage or is it better if this card goes in their hand? And I like seeing things like that in Magic a lot.
But the answer is almost always never correct for them. Like, it's a Punisher card where both effects are actually punishing.
Yes. No, I agree.
Which is something that hasn't really happened. Like, Remorseless Punishment from the previous set is just a terrible card.
Yeah.
To where losing the 10 life for it isn't always relevant, where it's a one-time deal. This is repetitive. It's never good for them. It never turns out good for them.
Yeah.
But, like, the way I see it is, worst-case scenario, they just put every card in your graveyard because they don't want you to have extra cards, and you do an extra, you know, 1 to 4 damage every turn, maybe 0 if it's a land, but just a little bit extra damage. Plus, it has menace, so it's hitting. So it's potentially doing, like, 4 to 5 damage every turn on its own.
And that's on a 3-drop. Yeah. Like, that's more damage per mana than any 3-drop we've ever had.
Yeah, card's insane.
Yeah.
Like, card's insane, and it makes me upset that we can have 3-drops in red that are this good, but we can't have a 4-mana sweeper. Like,
right?
I feel like someone has a vendetta against me at Wizards between green getting all these new draw cards in the last few sets, and then now red getting this insanely good creature that you know, gets card advantage just for sitting there, like... Nah, red's getting a little insane, and I'm upset about it, but whatever.
Me too. I was just thinking, like, oh, red's not just going to dominate standard in the first week. And then the same day, Sin Prodder and Gold Knight Castigator were spoiled, and I was like, whatever, man.
What a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only good thing that I can see coming out of this is that creatures are getting so much better that we need sweepers back soon. Like, hopefully they'll break the last straw and we'll get those back. But let's go on down this list, because what's the next one you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the Gitrog Monster, man.
Well, then talk about the Gitrog Monster.
Woo! All right, so this thing is, I mean, it lives up to its name, the monster. It's a 5-drop, 3 colorless, black and a green for a legendary creature, Frog Horror. It's a 6/6 with Death Touch. Then it has, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the monster unless you sacrifice a land. You may play additional lands on your turn. And then whenever one or more lands is put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card. So
that's a lot of text.
It is. And on a 5-drop, nonetheless. So, I mean, just looking at a 6/6 for 5, that's playable. Like, that's been playable before in Standard with, like, Arbor Colossuses and stuff.
Yeah, very good.
That's fine. Yeah, and then Death Touch, I don't really consider it relevant on this card because it's a 6/6. Right. So, like, it's going to eat most things anyway. But then it is a horror creature type. Relevant with, you know, Awoken Horror and the flipping of Thing in the Ice and whatnot. The upkeep sac land is interesting because it comes into on your upkeep, draw an extra card. Because you sac the land gets put in the graveyard, it triggers another ability, and you draw a card. So you're losing a land, but he already has built in, you play an additional land, so he makes up for it. But the biggest thing is the fact that it's draw a card when the land is put in the graveyard from anywhere. That's the key word there is anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So discard land, draw a card. Mill land,
yeah.
Draw a card. Sacrifice your Westvale Abbey or rather you flip it into the creature, somehow goes to the grave, you get it back, draw a card.
Yeah. Well, not even that, it fuels Delirium already because it's putting a land in your yard that you don't like. It automatically just sacks it because you're not going to sack. I mean, I guess sacking the creature if you need to turn on Delirium that way, if somehow they exile your creatures, but like it's guaranteed to turn on Delirium for that shenanigans. But then also the cards that you're using to help turn on Delirium, it makes it even better. Like Gather the Pack. It's 2 mana. Look at the top 5. You get a creature in there. If you have Spellmaster, you get 2 creatures or whatever. The rest go in the bin. Ugh. Well, if you Gather the Pack, you get for 2 mana, you get a creature out of it. If you hit 2 lands, which would be about the average, you draw 2 cards. So it's 2 mana, tutor a creature, essentially, out of 5 cards, and draw 2 cards, you know?
Yeah, not too shabby at all. And it's still a 6/6 beater. Like, after all that, it's still a 6/6 sitting around. And
on a stick.
What's even sweeter is they printed, you know, Drownyard Temple that goes just so perfect with it. Where it has
for sure.
Yeah, pay 3, return Drownyard Temple from the graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Like, there's your payment for, you do that every turn. It's your own Squee Goblin Nabob on a land to draw extra right. cards.
Yeah.
So
and then on top of that, like, if we want to go into Modern or, you know, other cards that aren't necessarily in Standard, we get Life from the Loam, Raven's Crime Shenanigans. Like, yes, please. Like,
how many times can you trigger a dredge trigger in Modern now? Like, it's going to be a new exactly. challenge.
But my favorite, actually, is Crucible and Ghost Quarter. You get to Ghost Quarter them, destroy a land, draw a card when it hits the yard, replay the Ghost Quarter out of the graveyard twice because you get to play 2 additional lands, Ghost Quarter them 2 more times and, you know, draw cards.
Ew. I was also, now that you mentioned that, I'll go even further back on you. I'll play Legacy and we'll be green-black lands the deck with Explorations, Mana Bonds, and Smallpoxes. We start looping multiple lands back into play. You know, here's a Wasteland, sack it. Oh, I'll get it back from a Loam, play it again, sack it, keep cheating my deck, doing whatever I want to do, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
So the abilities on this card are pretty busted. Yeah. Tying them with a few other cards makes them exceptionally busted. I mean, luckily it's a 5-drop. So
if 5 mana, it makes it fair. It's worth its mana.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable. So it might price it out of Legacy, but there's all kinds of other shenanigans in there, so who knows? But no, I mean, I dig
like
this
even
card.
In Standard or specifically probably Draft, Groundskeeper is in Shadows of Innistrad, which says pay to return a basic island or basic land, sorry, not island, basic land from your graveyard to your hand. So just if you draft this in Groundskeeper, like, oh, every upkeep, I'll sack a basic forest, pay to, you know, use the mana from the forest for half of it and return it to my hand. I get to play it again, you know?
Yeah, pretty solid. Yeah, this card, like, this card's solid. That's all I really got. I mean, yeah, it's got a lot of text on it. It's all pretty good. Like, there's really not much downside. playing it on its own, you run into the risk, I guess, of not hitting enough land drops and to where you're starting to have to sack your own land. But then you can just sack it as a clause, and at that point, it's probably drawn you four or five cards. So that's fair for a five drop. Like, and it's gotten some damage, and they're probably dead at that point. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
this card's pretty sweet. I like that it's got some aspects to it that are a little bit built around, but it's also pretty good on its own. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see what people do with this thing. So you said you got one more for us?
Yeah, this is the spicy one, because this it's probably not going to be one. Very all good. Right. Well, that one's just good. That was the Sin Prater was spicy. Insane. This that one's questionable. Gishrog Monster is good. This one's spicy, because I don't know if it's going to be good. Yeah. That's what makes it spicy. It's potentially insane, all which right, is Forgotten Creation, which is a 3/3 zombie horror for 4 mana.
Okay. Yeah.
Has Skulk, which is this creature can't be blocked by with creatures greater power.
Okay.
So it's not going to die in combat for the most part. And then it has this sweet line of text that says, at the beginning of your upkeep, you may discard all cards in your hand. If you do, draw that many cards.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. So Tutelage is still going to be in standard.
Nice. Okay. I like where this is going.
So we'll have Tutelage, and already Chandra Zero was already a consideration for Tutelage, but like put these two together, and like I don't see how you can not just mill them out for a million.
Tutelage on the battlefield, the game's almost over at that point.
Yeah, exactly. But also, it's a guaranteed Madness Enabler, so it helps the Madness decks, because every upkeep you get to discard your hand, and then it's... You know, your upkeep, so you still have a draw step and whatnot, but you get your mana is untapped, so you have all your madness potential for that. Also, set you can use it to set up Delirium. If you have something in your hand that you just want to throw in the yard to ensure Delirium, you get that too. Also, it enables all your zombie graveyard shenanigans. You know, it makes your Gyrograph Colossus as huge as you just throw a handful of zombies in the yard and then play one, giving it a ton of plus one counters. Plus, they just spoiled their reanimator spell that's 6 mana, reanimate 2 creatures in black. So you get that. You can use it with that. And it is a May option. So you don't have to do it if your hand's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all that's solid. And I think the craziest thing is, like, these are all busted ways to use it. But it's pretty good just using in a fair manner, too. I mean, sometimes refreshing your hand is pretty powerful. So, I mean... Yeah, like, I'm glad that it's a 3/3 for 4, so it's not a very exceptional creature at all on its own. Like,
well, just at the same time, though, it has Skulk, so things with a greater power can't block it. So, like, when it attacks in, you can only chump block it with, like, 1/1s and 2/2s, so it's not going to die in combat. And yeah. You get to attack for free, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, but as a card without the line, it's very... Okay, it's good, it's fine.
Sure,
and then, yeah, then it gets crazy with the ability on there. So, yeah, I mean, awesome. I can dig it. I could see it being good, but I totally get where you're coming from. This may not be a playable card at all in Constructed. It's all going to kind of depend on how it all shakes out.
But I just think it will be because it enables so many themes. Like, it enables, you know, reanimation or delirium and madness. Like, there's no way it doesn't see play somewhere because of that.
Someone's going to at least try it. Yeah, so it's just going to depend on how that does and what the other decks in the format look like. But yeah, no, I totally get your point. This card looks like it has a lot of potential for sure.
There is a card I want to talk about. One card that you kept mentioning that there is no 4-mana sweeper. There is a 4-mana sweeper. Is it good?
I do like this card.
It might not be, but it might not be more than a limited bomb. But
it's a
good
build around,
card.
But I like it.
3 colorless and a blue, or rather 3 generic and a blue, for Engulf the Shore. It's an instant. Return to their owner's hand all creatures with toughness less than or equal to the number of islands you control. 4-mana instant speed sweeper that sets you up for your turn to untap, draw, play land, and hold up 2 counterspells in your mono blue control deck.
Pretty awesome.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot.
It's got some good synergy with Thing in the Ice and stuff, you know, doing the same kind of thing.
Yep. The one thing I just, you know, that kind of makes me go eh about it is you're kind of in mono blue, and we don't know how good that's going to be. But like you mentioned with Thing in the Ice, the unique thing is if you have this and it's like your 4th spell cast and you trigger Thing in the Ice will flip over before the resolution of the spell, so Thing in the Ice will not get returned if you have less islands in its toughness.
Yeah.
So that's a huge upside.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can play around with it a lot. I mean, it would almost be a shame to trigger Thing in the Ice with it, though, just because Thing in the Ice, when it flips, it bounces everything, too.
It bounces non-horrors, and horror is a relevant creature type now. So now you really are just truly bouncing everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's why I mentioned the horror creature type on, like, the Gitarog monster and stuff like that.
Yeah, Thing in the Ice could be a big deal. But no, I mean, I do like this. I had the same thought where I'm like, man, if I can play mono blue control in standard, I'll be happy. If I can play mono blue control in modern, I'd actually be happy. I just don't think that, I don't know if that card's worth not splashing another color, or maybe it is, it's a light splash. Who knows? Maybe it's in Blue Moon. Like, but no, I like that card a lot. It definitely caught my interest. Seeing instant on there was a nice plus. But yeah, so I mean, that's obviously, there were more spoilers than that, but that was just kind of our picking out of the crop the things that we like. So we are coming up on time, so we're going to get out of this segment. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about flavor. Life of Flat. All right, welcome back, everybody. This, of course, is segment two. So, I mean, really what we're talking about for this segment is just the flavor of Innistrad. I mean, Watsi has done a good job over, I think, most sets of Magic, pushing like a flavor, a theme of what's going on in that set. And I know that now they're really pushing the story element more. They want the story to be more obvious. They want it to be told by the cards. And this is a great set for them to have coming out now, and it makes me really think that that's why they came back to Innistrad this time. There's a lot of stories going on at Innistrad, and I mean, the theme and flavor from the first set was amazing, and so far they're doing the same thing again. I mean, I was coming into Magic sort of right as Innistrad had already been out. Jerry and Alex, did you guys play like pre-release and stuff for Innistrad?
Yeah, I did. I played it in Korea with Korean packs. That was a trick.
Nice. So, I mean, but how did you guys feel about Innistrad the first time through?
I actually didn't play Innistrad the first time, as I was on deployment as well, but on an aircraft carrier, so I couldn't play Korean packs or anything. So,
I mean, it was the best limited set of all time because they really pushed limited strategies as well as the flavor of the cards themselves.
Yeah,
kind of work in coordination with these limited strategies. You know, the Delver strategy, it did kind of exist involving, you know, your thought. If you pulled some Thought Scours and a couple Delvers, it was a strategy you could do. And it felt like you were that mad scientist trying to perfect your perfect creation.
Yeah.
You're doing your thing. The self-mill strategy, it was a thing. They pushed it. You mulched away, you know, you did your mulch and you built yourself up. And then you either unburial rights something big and obnoxious, or you summoned a boatload of spiders from the grave. It felt like you were actually doing these things. It wasn't just going through the motions, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've done a good job where Innistrad is obviously a very sort of like horror style. There's a lot of throwbacks in this set, and there were in the previous set too, to all kinds of other things in pop culture. But I mean, like, it knocks it out of the park flavor-wise, just because, like, I'm glad that they paced themselves well with this. It's been a little while since we've been at Innistrad, so if this were a constant, it would get very tiring. But in real, like, you could have a whole card game that was just themed as Innistrad, and you'd have a long time to go before you ran out of stuff. So pacing it over a few years is awesome. So they've got tons of great build-up ideas. But yeah, so that's what we're talking about here. So how do you guys feel so far about the story of Innistrad this time around?
So I haven't even read the story, and I feel like I'm connected to the story. I understand what Nahiri's doing. I understand Soren. You know, I understand what Jace and with Tamiyo's journal and what's all going on. You don't even have to read the story, and you get a general gist of what's happening. You know, I get that Avacyn's trying to wreck people's faces. She went completely into full-on Crusader mode, you know? You can see it in the card. See it in the flavor text throughout all sorts of cards. A little side story that kind of, you know, that was built in by an artist with the original art of Angel of Flight Alabaster from the first Innistrad set. He had kind of created his own little angel, and throughout several pieces of art, you see her going through her whole story, and her final arc in the story is through the card Clipped Wings, where she's getting cut up and, you know, torn out of the sky. So, I haven't even read it yet, and I'm aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I'm sure that's what they're going for, is it's just this. Honestly, I've always been a player where the story is like third, fourth, maybe fifth layer for me. I don't care. It's a game that I enjoy. I want to play the game, the story, whatever. But there are a few sets that come out from time to time that pull me into the story, make me more curious, and this is definitely one of them. I mean, what you mentioned about Vissian is awesome. I love seeing the new card, and it's such a different path than the last Avissian that we had, so that's awesome. I mean, even pulling in some of these side characters like Avissian that we haven't seen for a while, we don't know what's going on, and now they're mixed into this story just fine, right? I mean, like, it makes sense for everything else that's going on in this plane. Clue, like, is a great mechanic in this set. I like it a lot as a mechanic, even without touching the story. And then when you mix in with the story and the flavor of the set, that's awesome. Like, yes, this whole set is built around investigation, which is great. It has a great sort of like H.P. Lovecraft kind of vibe, which obviously you would have to touch on with a set like this. But I just love that the mystery is kind of unfolding. We're getting to see that through spoilers, and then you get to sort of reenact that through playing the game where you have clue tokens coming out. I mean, yeah, it's great. I love it a lot. Awesome. So what about the Shadow? What clues have we seen in card arts for this? And I'm not even familiar, Alex. What is the Shadow?
It's still up for debate. We know it's something tentacle related for the most part from several of these cards we're going to talk about here in a bit. I mean, and that narrows it down to like Merit Lage, Emrakul, or something else we haven't seen before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so like it's been great though just to see the hints at it. I think that Merit Lage and Emrakul were two that came up fairly early in the discussion when the set was originally spoiled. And as it's going on, Emrakul kind of gets included because we've just left Eldrazi, so it makes sense that Emrakul was missing from the last set. It was the only Titan, right, that wasn't included in the last set?
Correct.
Right.
And so it's an obviously missing card that we were looking for, so that would bring it into Innistrad, I think, would be kind of neat. I know your guys' feelings on that. Yeah. Merit Lage for me, I mean, like, Dark Depths has always been probably one of my favorite flavor cards, maybe ever, just because it's such a cool card. So seeing that return would be awesome. I mean, yeah, they're doing a great job. Like, the Shadow is, I think most people are intrigued. Me, not caring about the story, I'm very intrigued. What clues have we seen in the card arts, though?
So in Engulf the Shore is one of the more obvious ones. Like, in the wave that's crashing, there's like a crazy tentacle monster thing going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be Merit Lage because he's aquatic based for the most part.
Yeah.
As he was frozen under a sheet of ice. Or it could just be some Leviathan we haven't seen yet, you know. Something like Lorthos that was on Zendikar, just like the god of the sea, essentially, you know.
Yeah, I can dig it.
But also kind of tentacle based, so it could be anything there, or Emrakul in the water, who knows. Another one is Manic Scribe. It's the blue one in the Delirium Cycle.
Okay.
But one, the card art is kind of crazy anyway, because like his quills that he's writing with are actually like through the palm of his hand, like they're like completely going through his hand, like it's crazy. But then also his hands are being like warped, and they kind of look like his pinky fingers, kind of like a tentacle looking thing.
Huh.
So that's kind of crazy. Also with that, we have Obsessive Skinner, which is the green in the Delirium Cycle. He has several like things hanging up on hooks, like, you know, skins and things, and one of them is a hand that appears to be severed, and it's the same way. The pinky is like a tentacle, and it's like missing a finger, and it's all warped. So then there's those going on where people are physically being kind of
turned
warped
into, or, yeah, whatever this thing is.
Yep, and then there's another thing going on in shown in the card art of Thraben Inspector and Daring Sleuth, which these are, it's showing like a patch of vines, like brambles kind of things, but it looks very tentacle-like as well, because they're not sharp, they're not, you know, pointy or like obviously like a thorn patch or something, but they're different. And like in Thraben Inspector, it's actually like crawling up a wall of a building.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we don't know what's going on with that. like that's kind of crazy. Another one is Paranoid Parish Blade. Has like a tentacle leech like attached to his wrist.
Huh.
Which is kind of crazy too, that maybe like people are being,
feeding,
you know, parasites
people, and
or
then,
something.
Yeah, getting turned into these things.
Yep. And then also one of the clue tokens, because they spoiled the token arts.
Mm-hmm.
There's six different tokens for clues. They're all different, you know, like a bloody feather for like the angels and stuff like that. But one of them is a medallion with like It's like a modification of the Innistrad symbol to where it has like tentacles kind of like curling off the bottom of it. And it looks like it's sitting on a beach. And the quote is from Tamiyo, and it says their chanting grows louder as the tide rises. Once again, hinting at like God of the Sea or something rising from there.
Nice. Yeah, some type of sea monster that's taking over. And I mean that, I mean, they're chanting. That implies like this is a group of these things, which makes sense with the taking over people. Huh.
And also the clerics and stuff that are going on, like Westville Abbey. So, like, there is definitely, like, a hidden, like, welcome to the fold is another card where a person's being, like, recruited to, like, a secret, you know, organization. So, like, there's definitely, like, a cult kind of, you know, Lovecraft feel to stuff going on, too.
Nice.
It would be absolutely insane if it, like, turned out to be nothing and, like, out of nowhere it comes into, it's Shadek working with Thassa and they somehow got to Innistrad and... The entire it could be anything.
I don't think we're gonna see the shadow in Shadow of Innistrad. I think it's gonna be in the next set. So like they're just gonna leave it open for this whole set.
What is the next? The next one is Eldritch Moon, right?
Yeah. So, which I mean, also the name doesn't apply anything specific. So
exactly, it's a little bit vague. Maybe the moon is what causes the rise of whatever this thing is. And
I mean, tides and the moon are connected. Yep.
I mean, that's what Tamiyo was doing in Innistrad in the first place. In the first block, she was there studying the different. Moon cycles and how weird it was out there because she's a moon folk from Kamigawa. So this was something that intrigued her. So we could have been spoiled on the moon from original Innistrad block. It's a conspiracy, guys. I don't know. It's absolutely mind-boggling how deep they went in with
spoiler
this.
Spoiler alert, it's Majora's Mask Moon. It's going to crash into Innistrad.
Wait a minute. Jason Tamiyo figured it out. It was Soren at the Drown Yard with a shard of broken glass.
Yeah.
Jeez. And that's the end of the cast now. Figured it out.
Can't top it.
Yeah, no, so, I mean... Speaking of Tamiyo, though, we've seen some hints at Tamiyo. We've seen her journal. Have we seen any other things going on with Tamiyo in this set?
She's on Innistrad. Confirmed. She's in card art.
Nice.
So what kind of leads it is Jace comes looking for answers. He finds Tamiyo's journal, which is another thing I really like for this flavor, because there's through several cards here that we understand, you know, Jace's journey to find Tamiyo.
Right.
He finds the journal. He pours over the pages, which is a card, is him looking through it, you know. Trail of Evidence shows him, like, walking through the pages of the book towards the Drown Yard.
Yeah, sweet card art.
Epiphany at Drown Yard. Obviously, he finds, like, where Tamiyo was trying to find. He finds the, you know, Drown Yard Temple, which is another card. All the cryptoliths made by Nahiri. It's very, like, Zendikar-esque. It looks like they're trying to follow, like, ley lines and things like that.
Huh.
To summon something there, something by Nahiri. And then we don't know what happens next yet. I mean, obviously the full set isn't spoiled as we record this, and they haven't released, you know, a story for it. But in the art of Avacyn's Judgment, it is Avacyn, like, busting through the stained glass window to mess them up, and it's Tamiyo helping Jace, like, climb up onto this ledge thing.
I mean, 19 mythics have been spoiled. We have a 20th mythic. Do we think it's a Tamiyo?
I don't know. I think she might be in the next set for sure. Or they could kill her. I don't know. It's Wizards. They could do whatever.
Yeah, they've done that one.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the last mythic is going to be either Tamiyo or the Shadow. Probably. Either one of these would be reasonable to leave until the next set. So it could be either. It could be neither, I suppose. But that would be kind of a letdown. But yeah, it doesn't feel like it's Tamiyo. We've got, what, 4 walkers already in this set.
And we have a blue Jace, so and Tamiyo is typically blue as well, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, it doesn't feel like Tamiyo. To me, it honestly feels like whatever the Shadow is going to be, but I still wouldn't be surprised if that was left till the next set.
I mean, we've had 5 Planeswalkers in a set before, several times.
Yeah, but we've never had, like, 2 blue walkers.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, I guess Tamiyo could be multicolor.
I mean,
yeah, but then that makes 4 multicolor.
Like if you want to go super, deep into what a blue planeswalker is, I mean, Nicol Bolas and Jace were both in the same set at one point. So
I mean, I'm fine with like a monocolor blue and then a blue splash. Like we've had like Ralzeric and some other blue planeswalkers at the same time too. But Tamiyo hasn't had a splash, and neither has Jace. So like 2 mono blue,
very blue walkers. Yeah,
true.
Yeah. Doing very blue things around the plane. Yeah. So yeah, no, I don't think it's gonna be Tamiyo quite yet. But either way, like just the fact that the story is driving our spoiler expectations is awesome, right? I don't think we've been like this for a while now. So it's cool to see just this whole thing play out, and I'm very curious to see what the next card is. One, because I want it to be a good card, but two, because I want to push the story forward. I mean, they're setting up for Eldritch Moon beautifully. I think that set's going to be just as good, if not better. They've got me hyped again, and I like that they've all of this is happening now. They've moved to this two set block, right?
Yes.
And I think that that is probably making it much easier on Wizards. I mean, telling a story over three blocks, that's tiring, right?
How are you gonna keep this up? And you have to hold stuff back too, to like, you know, make sure you get that third block to be decent.
Yeah, we've historically second and third sets were never as good as the first, and it's hard to come up with all of this story and then also stretch it over three sets and then delay it over much longer amounts of time than the turnaround on this is going to be for us to get the full set and story. So I think that we're seeing sort of the benefits of a lot of the changes they've been making recently. And I'm glad to see, like, we know that they plan so far and ahead. We know that they're looking out, 5 years they always talk about? They're always looking 5 years ahead?
Yeah,
something like that.
Might be three. Might be making stuff up. But this is very, they had to have, right, with this. I mean, this had to have been planned out farther. And it's coming together great.
Also, a thing I want to talk about this set, just real quick here, is the mechanics are so good for telling a story, because, like, typically in other sets we've had mechanics that were tribal or, you know, color based, like red had this mechanic and things like that. In this one, the mechanics are across all colors, like investigates in multiple colors. Delirium is in every color. Every color has like a madness card except for white so far. But like it's these mechanics that aren't limited, if that makes any sense. And it opens up a lot of design space for them, too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I like everything we've seen with these mechanics. They're great mechanics overall in general, but they're playing in the story beautifully as well.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at the hype over Shadows of Innistrad. Mm-hmm. And usually, when it comes to hype of a set, it's usually one thing. It's most usually just the cards themselves.
Right.
What does this card do? How powerful it is? But I think right now, from what I've been looking at or seeing on the internet, there is equivalent hype to the story of Shadows over Innistrad, just as much as there is over the cards, how powerful they are, how they're intertwining or meshing together. It shows that they put some serious thought into this. And from what I can see so far, they're executing it well.
Yeah, I mean, the story's playing out great. There's been cards that are spoiled that, from a playing standpoint, I couldn't care less about, but I love them for the art and for the story. And, I mean, really, even the non-constructed playable cards aren't horrible in this set. They've done a good job of making all of the cards sort of fit into a place somewhere. And then, yeah, I mean, the story just pushes all of that. Like, yeah, it's awesome. Like, I'm running out of praise to give it, but yeah, I'm super excited. Like, I'm very excited for pre-release for this set. And I don't even think I went to the last, four pre-releases, if that, just because I'd gotten worn out of them. But this set looks awesome. Like, I love all of the art. I love seeing these cards. I'm excited to see them in person. I'm excited to play with them. I'm excited to look at some of the art that I haven't paid as much attention to. So yeah, I mean, everything about this set is coming together great.
And speaking of the art, I really like the art style for this set, because, like, in the past, we've had very, you know, fantasy, like, elves and things like that that are the stereotypical and things like that. But these, it's more human-based, and they put a lot more detail into the faces, like the old man or, like, grizzled old people, because they've survived on this, you know, plane and things like that. Like, it's just more realistic art, I guess. It's not as fantasy-driven, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it also feels like this may have been all of the cards feel like a set. I mean, Magic suffered from that more so at the beginning of the game, where the arts were all over the place. So some of the early sets, they don't even look like they're from the same set. And they've gotten better and better at that, but this one feels like probably the most well-executed from an art standpoint. I mean, not just the theme looking solid through them, but all of these clues that we've gotten in cards, all of these, this is a very well orchestrated set overall, but getting so many artists to be on the same page and have this, like, the cards feel unique but also connected at the same time is awesome. Like, 2 years from now, you can pull out a random card from this set, and with the set symboled covered, you could probably guess that it was from Shadow of Innistrad.
Do you think them, Because it seems like they're trying to push the tribal themes. Do you think that helps in the set? Of them giving like, you like cards said, of a certain tribal pattern that can just make it more exciting of like, oh, I'm going to play vampires or, you know, I'm going to play werewolves.
That's definitely a thing. Like, Innistrad has always been tribal, and that wizard said they're pushing tribal again for this block. But like I said, there is some tribal mechanics. Like, obviously, werewolves have their flip right. mechanic and things like that. But like I said, Delirium is across all creature types. Like, there's not, like, a specific, you know, because it used to be vampires got counters. Like, things died or, you know, you could pay and put counters on them. And that was their shtick. They had that. If it was good, it was good. If it wasn't, it wasn't. Now they've got Madness, which we'll see for that. But they also have other stuff. They're not limited. And I really like that a lot.
Yeah.
And then also, they changed the way they're doing lords in this set, which I also really like. Like, the Diregeif Colossus or whatever is the zombie lord. But instead of just saying, all zombies get, you know, +1/+1, which would typically be a lord. Instead, he gets +1/+1 for every zombie in your graveyard. Whenever you cast a zombie, you get a 2/2 zombie. It's a lord, but a different take on it. The same with the blue one for spirits. It has flash flying. When it enters the battlefield, target spirit gains hexproof. So it's a lord and protects other spirits. Then it has, you may cast spirits as though they had flash. So it's an ability that works with a tribal effect, but without necessarily saying they have +1/+1 in the story.
Yeah, they didn't cop out on those on the lord-based effects. The human one, Thalia's Lieutenant, it enters the battlefield. It gives a +1/+1 counter to all humans you control. Then whenever another human enters the battlefield, it gets a +1/+1 counter. So they're all playing to different angles to the whole tribal thing. Like Olivia, Mobilized for War, is doing essentially the same thing, where if you discard a vampire, you get to bring it back in with a +1/+1 counter. Really sweet, you know, just really sweet how it's all going around, where they're not going into the old school Elvish Arc Druid type mechanic.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It feels like they've tailored what the lords do to make sense with the flavor of that tribe. I mean, the Geist one makes perfect sense. The human one makes... They're all... It's cool. It makes them a little bit more unique. Because, yeah, I mean, the days of having a Merfolk Lord and an Elf Lord that were the same card, just a different tribe, it's lazy, it's boring, it's uninspiring. It's not horrible, it's not the end of the world, but it doesn't really help the flavor at all. It's just a very vanilla sort of style of, yeah, here's the lord, he's getting everybody pumped up, so they're all better while he's there, the end.
And what they do is they also help create different types of decks that can exist.
Yes.
Like, I look at Thalia's Lieutenant, and I'm thinking, I just want to play Angel of Glory's Rise.
Yeah.
Like, I just want Angel of Glory's Rise in, 2 Thalia's Lieutenants, 3 other humans. Let's say they're all champions of the parish. So now they're all
for reasons
massive. They're all massive because they all entered the battlefield simultaneously, and they all looked at each other like, "Yeah, we're humans.
Let's do this. Humans." Yeah, I mean, and then like you run into a problem a lot where if you're looking at should I play elves or should I play merfolk, and there's a lot of the same thing going on despite it being two tribes, mostly from the lord's perspective. So this is pretty cool that we're seeing the tribes kind of change up some. And then like you said earlier, Alex, like, the tribes feel more like a part of everything else rather than their own independent thing. And, I mean, that just makes, like, you know, with Delirium and Madness being worked into these tribal cards, so it makes everything feel more connected, and it doesn't separate out the tribes or make them feel like they're attacked on or something like that. I mean, everything blends really well together. It gives the set a really good feel.
I think it'll help in the limited environment even more so, because you're not stuck with, I took an Elf Lord pack one, I'm stuck taking all elves.
Right.
Like, because the lords are so different and they have different abilities, like, you can work them into other decks.
Yeah, they're not just independently good with their fellow tribesmen. Yeah, like you said, yeah. There's plenty of them that are powerful enough to show up on their own, and some of these effects, yeah, aren't so tailored specifically to a tribe that you can play them out of tribe, and they're still fine. So, yeah, I mean, I dig it. They knocked it out of the park with that, and I'm glad you brought up the lords, because that's something I hadn't even caught in this set, and that is really cool. I hope that we see that going forward. So, what about some of... That's more of the serious stuff. What are some of the more, like, what have you guys seen that you like on these cards? Because there's lots of, like, nods and winks in this set. Are there any that have stuck out to you guys?
Okay, so a card that sticks out to me that I absolutely love it just because the name alone, alone is what sold me on it.
Okay.
Descend Upon the Sinful.
Okay.
That is the greatest name for a sweeper I've ever seen. Like, we know, Supreme Verdict, Wrath of God, whatever. Nah, we're going to talk about the actual act. I'm going to descend upon them. They're gone. Get them out of here. And then the flavor of the card of just, if you have Delirium, I get a 4-4 Angel to actually descend.
Yeah.
And do things.
And then Delirium, just like, you're really in this bizarre state of mind, like you're descending.
I'm coming like, at it's you. Happening. You know, all the angels
eyes are
all
wild.
All the angels are supposed to be, you know, in crusader mode, and here's an angel crusader coming down all angry and such, and just I'm here.
I still think my favorite is the pun. Uninvited Geist. Yeah. That one gets me every time. Because, like, the first time I heard it, I misread it as Uninvited Guest, where I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, that's Geist. Oh, and it's a spirit. Oh, spirits on Innistrad or Geist. Oh, nailed it. Like, the other one chance to do this, and they just crushed it.
Yeah, and it's not like, it's a little winky, and that's about it. It doesn't stick out. It's not cheesy. Like, it still makes perfect sense as a card. Yeah, I love it. I'm mad you said that one, because I think that's my favorite, too. I mean,
it's a good one. It's a good one.
Aberrant Researcher is a great one. Such a great throwback to Delver. I feel like it had to be done in this set. Delver is such an iconic card from this set. So seeing like his next Pokemon evolution in the line is awesome.
It's an independent evolution, so I think it's closer to Digimon, but you know, this or that.
Well, you know, there's one true monster anime, and it's Pokemon. So.
No, that's true.
Startled Awake is one that I love a lot, both as a card and as flavor, which there's a lot of those in the set. But just sort of like milling has always been a mental thing. It's always, you know, thought scour, things like that, where you're attacking the mind, right? So you've got that built into Startled Awake. You're startled in the middle of the night. And then it recurs as a nightmare creature, which, like, I mean, it's persisting. So it's coming from the graveyard. You can bring it back. It's a persisting nightmare that has startled you awake. It's reoccurring every night, so to speak. I mean, like, it's just awesome. I love the disappearing of it, it coming back, attacking the mind again, then coming back as a creature. Like, awesome. Love it.
So here's, I absolutely love the card too, you know, but here's my one beef with it.
All right, what's the beef?
Okay. I know they could not name it Recurring Nightmare because that's actually a magic card that already exists. So they named it Persistent Nightmare, but it doesn't have persist. I mean, come on. You got to check yourselves.
It persists even more than that. That's the thing.
Yeah, it persists by returning to the hand and milling you for 13. Like,
nah. But,
and also 13. You know, lucky number there, too.
On a
we've
serious
seen 13
note
somewhere
with it,
else
though,
in this set.
This is the mythic that if you pull it in limited, you win.
Insane. It's a bomb.
You mill them for 13 and you connect with it for one time and mill them for 13 again, they're dead. They don't have a deck left.
It's going to connect because the only thing I can drop it is a zero power creature.
Yep.
Because it has Skulk.
Exactly. It's impossible to deal with.
It's such a sweet mechanic to have on this, too.
You shouldn't.
You know, it's a
you should not
goofy
lose.
Nightmare and has Skulk.
If you cast this on turn 4 and then turn 5 recur it, you should not lose any limited game. That's how strongly I feel about this. And granted, it's a mythic. It should be like that.
Yeah.
But this card, compared to all the other mythics, this one is lights out. The best one for limited.
Yeah. Sure. I like it a lot. Hopefully I'll be casting that at the pre-release, ruining people's days and their nights every night.
Gosh,
over and
good.
Over.
Oh, man. That was too good.
All right. So, another one of my, I know you guys all love this card too, so I'm sorry for pulling it, but Thing in the Ice, that card's amazing. Like, an obvious reference, you know, John Carpenter's The Thing, but like, yeah, it's just another one where the flavor's amazing, the abilities of the card make perfect sense with it. Awesome card, love it.
And the card's just amazing too, as a 0/4 for 2.
Yeah, bonus.
With upside.
Fine.
Is already playable in like your green ramp or your blue control strategies where you're trying to get there to
the end
game.
And
it's going
to be a real problem.
Yep. And when it flips for the all non-horror for older formats, it's important to note that it doesn't bounce Spellskite.
Yep.
Ikarid, if you're playing Dredge in Vintage, and it doesn't flip, it doesn't send back to your hand Phyrexian Revoker, all of which are horrors that you want on the battlefield and not to really go back to your hand for any real point.
And it does bounce Snapcasters, which is awesome.
What's even another thing is Thing in the Ice fit, like, I'm going back to Vintage here, is that the card fits so well in the almost every Vintage strategy. except for Workshop. Like, I put it in Storm just to see if it would do anything, and I only storm, like, I looked at it, and I was only storming for, like, 5 cards, and I hit my tendrils and flipped them, you know, hit them with tendrils for, like, 12 life, and then it would flip over for a 7-8 horror. Now I got you on lethal on my turn. Like, it's absolutely sweet in those decks. It's sweet alongside Monastery Mentor, Young Pyromancer. The card's good, and it will see older format play.
Ooh, yeah, that and Grixis Delver in Modern is actually not too shabby. I don't
like,
know.
So I'm going to play in Blue Moon. It's going to be sweet.
Blue Moon, it sounds amazing. I like it in Blue Moon a lot.
There you go. There's another deck that just might want it.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah.
I'm going back to some flavor here. How about, I don't even know how to pronounce that. Inexorable? Is that it? I don't know. The Blob.
Oh, like, inexorable Blob.
Yeah, it's the Blob.
Like, right.
It makes a 3/3 ooze every time it attacks. So the oozes just keep coming. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and taking over everything.
You ooze, you lose. Oh.
Yeah.
One that I like, but I'm terrified to have to try to say, is Trisket. Nope.
I got it.
Triskets.
Triskaidekaphobia. That one I do know.
Triskaidekaphobia. I had to look this one up and actually learn what each letter word of it meant.
Sphere 13, right?
Yes, it is. Tris is Latin for 3, Kai is Latin for and Deca is Latin for 10, and Phobia is Latin for fear. So 1 and 3 is 13.
Ah, okay.
Or rather, 10 and 3, sorry.
Sure, yeah, I gotcha. Either way, this card is another one that's, like, 1, so the card literally means the fear of 13. What does the card do? If you're at 13, you lose. Like, you should be scared of it. It works out. It's going to actually kill you.
But not only that, the artwork on the card... You see a guy panicking in the background, and then I started looking at it. I'm like, 13 red lines, 13 kitchen tools, 13 pieces of wood, the arc for the 13, fireplace is 13.
In the barrel. There's 13, 13 logs rivets, on like our wall panels. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
The shattered plate on the floor shattered into 13 pieces. There's 13 trees in the woods. Like, this guy is wigging out.
and also each line that each player loses or with exactly 13 loses is 13 words. It just keeps going on that card.
Like, and so the card isn't really a constructed thing, but there was an EDH combo that kind of came out, and it's kind of sweet. I thought I'd mention it. Another Innistrad card from original, the Mythic Tree of Redemption, 3 generic, 1 green for a 0/13. That says tap, exchange your life total with its toughness. So what you do is, in response to the Triskaidekaphobia trigger, you switch your life total, and then with a life conduit out, you trade your life total with an opponent, so they just lose the game. And then, come on. It's pretty sweet.
I'm sure.
Sure. For our EDH listener. There you go.
Hey, EDH listener, I love you.
Cherry's looking out for you.
I'm all about you, bro.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we're coming up on time on this.
Oh, we got 2 more I want to talk about for flavor, just real quick here.
All right, bang them out.
We got Scourge Wolf, which has the Resident Evil dog mouth, which is
big
sweet.
Big fan of that.
And Second Harvest, which is just some guys in a cornfield, very Children of the Cornfield, you know?
Yeah, Children of the Cornfield is a very big favorite of mine, so I'm glad to see that. Good old Malachi hanging out. But I mean, overall, though, like, this set's just insane. I mean, I feel like the horror kind of theme is... one that is a little easy to do, but Wizards goes above and beyond that and just knocks it out of the park. Tons of references to all kinds of things. Tons of little this, a little that, but it still all comes together as one set as a whole that feels great. So, I mean, they're killing it. Like, I'm very excited to see how this plays over to Eldritch Moon. I'm very excited to play this set. I mean, awesome job to Watsy. Returning to Innistrad had to be kind of a stressful thing to do just because the first set is so highly revered that you know the stakes are high, but it looks like they've done it again. So I'm very glad to see this set coming out. Everything looks awesome. Any other last thoughts on Shadow over Innistrad before we get out of here?
So if I play Second Harvest with Dead Kids from Origins, do I have a flavor win deck?
No. Okay. Next.
All right, so from now on, when we say, does anybody have anything else, we're going to say, is anything but Jerry have anything to add at the end?
I already turned his mic down. We're good to go.
All right, sweet. Yeah, just turn it off for the next couple episodes. That was your one shot, Jerry. You had one chance.
You blew it. Now you're just as silent as those dead kids. Anybody else?
No, I just think the set looks good enough that even if you get bummed out because you don't you don't win an event or whatever, you can just look at the cards and
still be fun.
Try and pick up what other little things that you looked over the first time you looked at them.
Yeah, there you go. If you find yourself in the 03 bracket at your pre-release, just hang out and look at your cards. Like, it'll still be fun. It'll still be cool. And if your opponent's taking forever, you can look at the art on your cards even more, too.
I think it's going to be a sweet set. Just, like, even if Standard is, you know, you just play, like, the Jace deck or else, because I think Control is going to be good and you can't afford Jaces, I think this is going to be a fine set that you can just draft. Draft throughout the Standard, and I think you'll enjoy it just the same.
Yeah, no, it looks awesome. Draft looks sweet. Limited environment in general looks sweet. Awesome set. But all right, that is going to do it for us this week. We are getting out of here. We will talk to you next week. Sorry, this episode's a little bit late this week. It's been a crazy week. If you're still listening at this point, this apologies for you. Everybody's probably already turned off this episode, though. So for the one guy listening, sorry, man.
Our three dedicated listeners.
Yeah, they just they hang on to the last second till that song fades out. This is still for you. This is still just for you. Bonus segment. But no, that's going to do it for us. Sorry again for the late episode this week. It'll probably happen again, but hopefully not too soon. Bye. Oh, shit.